Hi, I'm Allison Hess.
And I'm Stephanie Graham.
Welcome to the Thousand Islands Playhouse Podcast.
For the 2025 season, we have seven amazing productions taking place in our Springer and Fire Hall theaters.
Join us as we talk to the artists that will make this season shine and get a behind-the-scenes peek at what's happening this summer dockside.
Don't forget to tune in
to give your ears a front row seat.
See you at the theater.
Welcome back to the 2025 season of the Playhouse Podcast. We're recording today on the ancestral lands of the Haudenosaunee and Anishinaabeg peoples, and we're recording on site at our Herbert production facility. My name is Stephanie Graham, and I am the Artistic Associate here at the Playhouse.
And I'm Allison Hess, the Education and Engagement Manager. Welcome to our fifth episode of the 2025 season of the Playhouse Podcast. Today, we're discussing the classic Canadian play, The Drawer Boy, by Michael Healy. Morgan and Angus are two elderly bachelor farmers living a quiet, secluded existence. That is, until a young actor, Miles, from Toronto, arrives to research rural life for a play. As Miles learns about their lives, buried secrets and the bonds of friendship are unveiled, blending humor with heart-wrenching emotion. Written by Brockville's own Michael Healy, this transformative play blurs the line between performance and reality, letting the power of connection and the resilience of the human spirit shine through.
The Drawer Boy is the second production this season playing in the Fire Hall Theater, and some listeners might have seen it back in 2002 when the Playhouse produced this production on the Springer stage. Today, we have stage manager Rebecca Eamon-Campbell with us in studio. Welcome, Rebecca.
Thank you.
Hi, Rebecca.
Hello.
Rebecca, so you've worked extensively, both here at the Playhouse and across Canada. Most recently here, you've worked on Mary's Wedding and Sequence. And across Canada, you've worked with NAC Indigenous Theatre, Western Canada Theatre, GCTC in Ottawa, and Soulpepper Theatre, among many, many others.
It's a lot of fun.
And we love, you know, having you back year after year. It's so nice.
I really love coming back to Gananoque. It really does feel a little bit like coming home every summer.
Yeah.
It's such a friendly town. And the company has a special place in my heart, for sure.
All right, Rebecca. Stage managers have such an important role in theater, but often there is a lot of misunderstanding of what that job entails. How would you describe the role of a stage manager in a production?
That's a great question. I mean, I really feel like central communicator kind of comes to the surface for me. That is definitely the hub of all communication. A lot of people will say bringing order to chaos or recording blocking or doing schedules. There's lots of paperwork and all of those things are true. But really, I feel central communicator is reflective of a lot of what stage management entails because you are connecting departments and people and actions all towards a common goal.
For our listeners, the stage manager truly is the center of the room, I find. In a rehearsal hall, we cannot do anything without them.
Well, yeah. And I think even those of us who may have done community theater, theater at, you know, at the high school level or college level, you know, we see what the stage manager does in the room, and as you said, like writing and blocking, but you start beforehand. There's a lot going on even before you enter the room. What is that process like when you're preparing for a new production?
For me, it's changed over the course of my career, for sure. When I first started out, I just wanted to work on whatever I could get my hands on. Every different play brought a new group of people, a new set of directors, a new set of designers. I liked to move around a lot early in my career. I was in Calgary, I was in Vancouver, I was in Regina, and I really enjoyed every minute of that. Every time a theater would very kindly say, do you want to come back next season? Or do you want to be a resident stage manager here? And I would say, no, thank you, because I just wanted to keep going. The more places I went, the more I learned. And so prep-wise, in those days, at the beginning of my career, I just attacked everything. Everything was, hand me any play you want and I'll do it. Later in my career, I would definitely be more choosy. So I would ask, you know, what is the play? Who is the director? Where is it being put on? How big is the theater? And the first thing I always do is read the play and I read it for myself. Perhaps it's something I've done before. Perhaps it's something I've heard of but not done. Perhaps it's something I've seen. It could be any combination of things. But I do enjoy just to read the play first and get a sense of it just for story. And then we move on into what I call the regular prep. And the regular prep, professional stage managers are always hired 1 week in advance of the rest of the acting company on site. And that gives us time to do all the things that we need to do. We meet with the different production departments. We set up the rehearsal hall. We tape the floor. We gather rehearsal props, rehearsal costumes, anything we can do to help make that first week of rehearsal go as smoothly as possible. We're doing schedules. We're doing props lists. We're doing costumes lists. Lots of paperwork. Lots of connecting departments and a lot of communication and just getting the lay of the land so that when the new group comes along, the designers, the actor, and the director, they've already been doing their own work at home on the play. But when they arrive on site, they really need that anchor person to be able to help run the room and direct them to where they need to go in order to maximize the time that they have available to them.
Can you talk more a little bit about when you talk about meeting the departments during that prep week? Because every time you do a production, you're always kind of landing into an ecosystem of departments, of carpentry, of costumes, of paint, of props, all of those things. And how do you navigate those conversations, especially if you're coming into a theater maybe you haven't worked in before?
We have so many amazing artisans and craftspeople and just really wizards backstage across this country. And quite often they are behind the scenes. They are never on stage. They're in the program, but we never, as an audience member, get to see those people. And I really love, as a stage manager, I love walking into the backstage area. When I was working in the office at the National Arts Center, when my kids were small, whenever I was feeling a little bit down, I would always wander into the shops or I would wander backstage and the production team would say, "Hey, Rebecca, rough day up there raising money?" And I would say, "Yep, I'm just going to sit back here for a minute and remember why I'm here and why we're doing this." Because that's really the heart of it. I like to introduce myself. And if I have, you know, an assistant stage manager or an apprentice with me, the stage management team will go as a group and we'll go and meet each production department head. So the head of props, head of costume, head of carpentry, scenic paint, and just move through those departments and say, "This is our understanding of the play." Stage managers will do their own props list, but quite often, for instance, when I met with Rachel here at the Playhouse, who's our head of props, they already had a list from the designer for the drawer boy specifically. So Rachel said, "I'm working away on this list that Nick, the designer, has given me, and then we're going to cross-reference it with the list that stage management has put together." There's things called implied props. So for instance, there's a scene in the drawer boy where they have to remove some freshly baked bread from the oven. So it says, Morgan takes the bread out of the oven. Does Morgan have an oven mitt? Does Morgan use a towel? We know logically that it can't just be grabbing it out of the oven unless it was specifically put in by the playwright that he's going to be burned. That is not the case in the play. It just removes the bread from the oven. So that's one of the little things that stage management does. It says, okay, well, we've got to have an oven mitt or a tea towel or something. And so that's where we help fill in those, some of those gaps of things that are not in the script, but are actually implied. So just little things like that really help us to solidify that we're all on the same page. We're all working towards the same look and feel for the show and what is available in rehearsal. In the drawer boy, they're in an old farmhouse with a kitchen. Are we actually going to have running water? Are we going to have any portion of the kitchen in rehearsal? Or is it just going to be a taped out box on the floor that says sink, which is quite often the case? And that's okay. As long as we know, then we can relate that to the actors and director, and then they know.
I just want, something came up in your description there that you were working at the National Arts Center as an arts administrator, mm-hmm. working in development. Was that before you became a stage manager or in between? Or how does working in arts admin inform your practice as a stage manager?
It was in between for me. So I was a professional stage manager working, you know, full equity member working out west. And I paused for a moment when I moved back to Ontario, where I'm from, and took a 1-year course about arts marketing. And it was specifically 1-year crash course by the Cultural Careers Council of Ontario. And they said, we want to take people who actually do art and we want to teach them about marketing and fundraising. And so we're not going to send them back to school for a long time, just send them back for 1 year and we're going to give them placements, practical placements. So I did a 6-month marketing placement at the Canadian Magazine Publishers Association, of all places. And I learned all sorts of things about the magazine publishing industry that I never knew, which was fabulous. And then I had a second 6-month placement at the National Arts Center in Ottawa with the fundraising department. My goal was never to become an arts administrator. My goal was to understand why fundraisers would come into my rehearsal hall bringing donors on tours and interrupting my time. And so I was really trying to figure out, what are these people doing? How could they do it more efficiently? I guess I better figure out what they're doing. Maybe someday I want to be a general manager of a theater company. I should probably know this stuff. And so I ended up that 6 month placement at the National Arts Center Foundation turned into 10 years of doing fundraising. And so I paused on stage management and threw myself into the world of fundraising. And really, I was more of an operations manager for the foundation. And what that allowed me to do was really see the parallels between what I did as a stage manager and what I could do as more of a project manager. So instead of a director, I had a CEO. Instead of actors, I had fundraisers. Instead of an audience, I had donors. But the moments and the machinations that go into raising money, it's all about relationship building. And what are we doing on stage is we're looking at the building of relationships between people on stage and all the stories that we tell. And really, the donation is just the beneficial byproduct of this wonderful relationship that we have with the audience and the donors. So the work was not all that different. And I really understood now why people were knocking on the rehearsal hall door and saying, can we do a tour? Can these donors sit in on this first read? Because now I fully understood that. And I think from the fundraiser's point of view, when you're at, you know, the level of the National Arts Center fundraising, a lot of the professional fundraisers who worked there didn't necessarily come from an arts background. They may have come from education or healthcare. And I felt like I really contributed as a bridge. So I could meet with English theater and talk about the projects that they wanted to do. And I could take that back to the fundraisers and say, this is why they want to do this. And this is why it's important. And can we find a set of donors to meet that specific need? And I think that was appreciated on both sides. And I really, as much as I love the fundraising world, I did miss the theater. So once my kids were old enough, I was determined to get back into the hall.
The rehearsal hall is a very special place. Speaking of rehearsal halls, alongside plays, you've also worked on large musicals, including Jersey Boys here in Gann. Do you approach plays and musicals differently?
I do. I mean, essentially, the communication and putting all the pieces together, that is all similar. What changes in a musical is that you now have more directors. So now you have a stage director, and then you also have a musical director, then you also have a choreographer, right? So your creative team grows quite a bit in a musical. You are scheduling musicians as well as scheduling actors, perhaps scheduling children or something like Mary Poppins or Once. And so that element for musicals, everything just gets amped up a little bit more because you've got that larger creative team. Musicals are a ton of fun. There's nothing like calling a musical. And I was so fortunate to work with Dustin Wales on Once. Dustin was the stage manager for the rehearsal period, and I was the stage manager for the run. And so he did all the scheduling and all the figuring out, and I got the really fun job of calling that show 8 times a week.
Yeah, it's a beautiful show. And I think there's something special about stage managing musicals in that the way you call a show is quite different. Can you expand on that?
Can we also let our audience know, what does it mean even to call a show?
Well, so we have something called the book. The book is the script printed out. Lots of stage managers now are going digital and they have a book on an electronic tablet. I am still old school. I have my book printed out. And in the case of a musical, you'll have a script page and then you'll have, depending on, you know, somebody says the final line and then the lights go out. So there's a blackout. So that blackout would be assigned to a specific number. So it would be lighting cue 27. And so you would say, standby lighting cue 27. They would say the line, and at the perfect time at the end of the line, lights 27 go. In a musical, you're quite often calling off the music and not off the scripted parts of the musical. And so in that case, for me, what I do is I call off the score. And so maybe it's right on the button at the end of a song. And so we'll write a square around those final notes, and then we'll follow along, put all the cues into standby. And then when they hit that button or they hit that final guitar strum, you know, lights and sound go. Sometimes the cues are so fast and furious that you don't actually have time to say the number. So it might just be lights go. Sometimes they pile up on each other. And so it might just be lights go. Go, 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 and then back to lights 27. So that's calling a show. Everything that happens on stage is called by the stage manager when it has to do with like a technical element. Lights, sound effects, automated pieces moving across the stage, anything like that. When I'm calling a musical, I'm more often than not standing, and I'm likely tapping, keeping the beat on the table beside me. I don't play an instrument, so I did not grow up reading music. I did grow up dancing, so I do have that sense of rhythm, and I can follow the music. I could not play it, but I can follow it. For a play, I'm probably sitting, and I've got my book up in front of me, and I'm following along. In both cases, we also take notes while we're running the show. So if a section is skipped, if an actor misses a line, if the gunshot didn't go off, if the piece didn't move, and then I will follow up later with those notes. But every show, there's something a little different.
The right. Beauty of live theater.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And from what you're describing too, it sounds like you're the person who's there keeping track and making sure that the show continues to be what the director envisioned, right?
Yes. And I would argue sometimes a longer run, human nature, when you do something over and over again and you get really good at it, maybe the fight's getting a little too fast for the audience to follow. Let's just bring that back down to what our original show speed was. So it could be something like that, that is more technical or safety oriented. It could also just be maintaining that artistic integrity of the show. What was the vision that the director and designers and actors all came together to build? And how do we maintain that over the course of the run? Is the show on opening night the same as the show on closing night? Likely not. But is the artistic intention and integrity and motivation the same? Hopefully, yes.
All right, let's switch our focus now to talk about Joroboy itself. What's your history with the play, Rebecca? Did you see the production produced here, or have you seen other productions, or what's your relationship to the story, and has it changed over the years?
I actually have not seen a production of The Joroboy.
Well, you're going to see a few this season.
I'm going to see it a lot, which is great. I have always loved the script. I remember when it was first produced and when it first came out. I knew of it because Michael Healy was also from Brockville and I was from Brockville. I had not actually seen a production of The Joroboy, but I knew of the play. I also knew of The Farm Show. We had done a production in high school of The Farm Show, which we took to what was then the Sears Drama Festival, and it went all the way to the provincials. And I was actually acting in that play. So when I read The Joroboy, and there's a moment where the two farmers see a rehearsal of what the actors are working on, and they describe a scene that happens in The Farm Show. And I thought to myself, oh my gosh, I was a tractor wheel. Like, I know exactly what they're talking about. Because I was a tractor wheel in The Farm Show. And so when The Joroboy came out, I was in theater school. So I had heard of it and I knew of it, but I have never actually seen a production of it. So I'm really excited. It's always been on my list of plays to do. My favorite thing to do is Canadian and Indigenous work. That's always been my favorite thing to do. And I'm just super excited that I finally get to add this one to my list.
It really is a beautiful play. And it's a play about Canadian theater as well, which I think is so beautiful. I saw the original production in the first few years when it was on its national tour, and it's really special.
It is a gorgeous, gorgeous script. It's just such a lovely story. Even just, we're only on day two of rehearsal, and even just in the room, there's such a wonderful feeling of being locked in, and locked in a good way, like really focused in. And watching Tom Barnett and Patrick McManus, who is a fabulous actor, and Stephen Jackman Torkoff, who is just amazing, and watching these three characters bring this life to this, and we are barely on our feet. I'm already sensing the moments. And as a stage manager, I have to be careful that I don't start watching the show. And you are no longer focusing on your job, which is calling the show. So yeah, it's really special. These three are already hitting it off, and it's just going to be amazing.
So much of the work as a stage manager is focused on the practical elements of putting together a show, but there has to be a passion for theater and art in order to thrive. Would you consider a stage manager an artist? And how do you balance these practical elements with your artistry?
I love this question because for me personally, I do consider stage managers artists. I know a lot of my stage management colleagues will say, I am not part of the talent. I'm part of the technical team, or I am a stage manager, and that is its own entity. And we exist between the technical and the talent world. For me personally, I do think stage managers are artists. I do think we are constantly using our creative brains. And for me, the most important thing about stage management is kindness and empathy. And I don't know how you do that without creativity. They're so interconnected for me. You know, even before I began working professionally, my whole approach has always been one of coming from a place of kindness and putting myself in the other person's shoes. And I feel like there is artistry in that. Some shows I've had directors say, is this going to work? Am I missing something? And they encourage contribution from stage managers. I've had other shows where the director has been very focused on building something with the actors and then checking in with stage management outside of rehearsal. I don't feel stage managers can really go wrong when you approach any project with kindness and empathy and artistry. You're contributing. You're contributing as an artist. I mean, I also think scientists are artists. I think mathematicians are artists. I feel like there's so many parallels. That expression of artistic ability and artistic joy that just kind of erupts, I think, can be in any profession.
You know, I think back to you talking about when you do musicals, when you call a musical, how you stand. And it's almost like you're kind of you're playing your book, you're playing the cues, you have it in your body in a lot of ways. You're fully in it, right?
Absolutely. And I think you can see that. There's some great YouTube videos of stage managers calling shows. And you can see some of these massive, you know, Broadway musicals, and they are not moving an inch. They are locked in at their station, and it is, you know, military precision. And then there are other stage managers who are much more fluid. And it really just depends on the job, the environment, the production, and your own personal style.
I feel like none of us can thrive, whether we're in production, in stage management, in design, in administration, unless we care and are passionate about the art that we are all collectively making, whether it's fundraising, choreographing a dance number. You know, if we're not passionate about the art, we make a lot more money doing other things.
Absolutely.
And I love being able to share that with our audience. So I know you're from Brockville originally. You're now out of Kempville. Do you have a favorite spot in town?
So many favorite spots.
Like,
oh my gosh.
Do you even choose?
Yes. Oh my goodness. Okay. So what I like to do if I don't have a lot of time, but I just need a moment, is I go to McDonald's and I get my breakfast sandwich and I go to Gray's Beach just outside of town and I sit on the beach and I eat my breakfast sandwich and I drink my tea and I just have a moment with the water lapping at my feet and I pick up little shells and stones and then I can just feel calmer when I start my day. That's one little thing I do. If I have more time, I love to go to, you know, Laverne's or Taste of Syria. That's a lovely food truck that I love to go to. There's just so many places in Gant. I just love to walk along the water. So many little trails and things that I really, really appreciate about Gant. Wait.
I always say it's the best view from any lobby in the country.
It is amazing. It really is amazing. I can't think of another one like it.
Thank you for joining us today, Rebecca. We just love talking with you. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you. And I mean, thank you for finding the time, because as a stage manager, we didn't even get into it, but you know, you start a week earlier, but you also are here before the actors. You stay after and you put out the schedule for the next day and do all the notes. So thank you. And thank Alan, your fantastic director, who worked together to find some time to let us talk with you. So thanks so much.
Indeed. Thank you.
Thank you to our audience. And thank you, as always, to Mark Hunt for composing the music for the Playhouse podcast. For more ticket information about the Drawer Boy or the whole season, please visit us at thousandislandsplayhouse.com.
See you at the theater!